Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the October 12 edition of Commodity Week. The United States Department of Agriculture released the October reports, and over a two-day period, the trade seems to have said it's bullish. No, it's not. We'll ask why today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Joe Prasocki, Director of the Statistics Division at USDA NASS. Our panelists in studio today include Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of West Lafayette, Indiana, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgrigoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Well, let's open the discussion with this question. Did you catch that USDA reduced the average cash price of soybeans by 75 cents a bushel from last month to this month?
Sure did, Todd, and I think that's one of the reasons that I've lowered some of my goals on when I'm going to start selling the beans that farmers have been putting in the bin. I think that, our old goal was $18, and now it's $16.50 to $17 is where we're going to be looking for. I think that, the carryout didn't grow that much, but we did add in, some extra exports along the way and some extra business, and we don't have to ration near as much to get to the end now.
Kurt Kimmel?
Yeah, when they looked longer term there, I think their expectations came down a little bit. Like Wayne said, we're tight, but not real tight. But when you look at the world supply-demand balance sheet in the southern hemisphere, the huge amounts they've got penciled in there, there's probably no reason to go high right now. Now, if South America would start to run into some trouble here this winter, we believe they might expand that range to the upside.
And Bill Gentry.
Yeah, I think didn't catch it right away, but I agree with the South American situation. A lot of those numbers are dialed in pretty high, and we're just a little bit concerned that that might be a recipe for disaster later on, especially if weather kicks in.
Well, this week in Chicago, November beans had a high on the week. Oh, I didn't write the high on the week or the low down, so I do have a settlement price for it, $15.22.5. They were down 29 cents. It's actually the next year's November 13 crop I want to ask about at the moment anyway. $13.38.5 was the settlement price. It finished 17 cents higher. Lang went back and looked at this week last year, $12.36.5. So we're about a dollar higher today than we were last year on what is effectively the new crop soybeans. Should producers think about making a sale?
Yeah, you certainly can think about it. This is time to probably start putting together a game plan. But as far as strategies goes, one of the things we think you have to be doing right now is evaluate your basically year in a year out. You don't have crop insurance values established until February. If you do want to choose to get something priced, don't be too aggressive and use something that's very, very flexible.
Agree with Bill. I think that it's time to be looking at some of this. These are some good profitable levels. And if the weather holds and South America produces what they're producing, they'll be $1.50 to $2 cheaper come spring.
Were you happy with USDA's numbers when they were released Thursday morning for the soybeans?
Oh, yeah. We were long. It's nice. Nice report.
Were you happy on Friday when they went back down?
I wasn't very happy Friday. Friday afternoon was kind of tough, but we got through it okay. But it's a situation where there's a lot of moving targets, you know, planted acres, harvested acres, yield, feed demand, exports. And for the most part, they were, you know, acceptable, and those are the numbers we're going to have to work with. They're still going to be subject to change as we move down the road.
You know, that October soybean forecast of 2.86 billion bushels was about 90 million bushels larger than the average trade guess. It was also 126 million larger than the September forecast. So it was a pretty good size bump in the marketplace. I don't think it was one that the market really didn't expect, though.
They were looking for a larger number. We've continued to hear that the bean yields are better. The bean yields are better. You know, in our area, we've had yields from one bushel to the acre up to 59 bushels to the acre, but most of them are falling in the 25 to 30 bracket. You know, it's going to be awfully hard until we get this whole crop harvested in the bins and take a look to know where we're really at. But we're probably in that 37 bushel mark is probably where we belong to be, Todd. But yes, those extra bushels is just like I said, it doesn't make our rationing till we get to the Brazilian crop near as hard to get to now.
Hey, speaking of rationing and usage more than rationing, we have used an awful lot of soybeans in terms of what's booked already for the export market. Do you suppose China will continue to buy for very long? They can't wait too terribly long, I think.
No, I think realistically the new era is that they will be perpetual buyers, and when they're absent is when you really have to get nervous about it.
Expectations for them to be absent?
No, if they become absent for an extended period of time.
Yeah, oh, I understood that. I just didn't know whether you could pick when that was going to happen or not. All right, let's turn your attention to the corn market. December contract this week, a high of $7.76, a low at $7.32.5. It was an outside up week buy in the marketplace. $7.52.75, finished just 4¾ of a cent higher. Next year's crop at $6.34, up 9¾, and I went back and looked at that one too. Last year at this date, $6 and a penny for the old crop corn, or the current season corn. When you pulled in those numbers from USDA on Thursday morning of this week at 10.706 billion bushels, it wasn't too far off what the trade was thinking.
No, fairly close when you look at the big picture there. You got to expect some flexibility there. Like I said, there's a lot of moving targets. But the key is when you look at the bottom line carryout, it suggests we're still going to remain somewhat tight. We feel we're going to continue to be at a pipeline supply, whatever the trade feels that is. And, you know, until we get into, you know, next spring, we feel that the market's going to be supporting on breaks as we move along. The market did its thing in here. We found a 20-week cycle low come in place here. The market did rally up. We regained about half of what we lost there, and then we corrected. So it's going to be important for the market to find some legs here first part next week.
It was an outside-up week. You feel good about the corn market going forward because of that and the fact that we're well more than halfway done in harvest?
Yeah, I do, Todd. I think that, you know, unfortunately, we need the flashy beans to lead the way up to do anything good. But look at the strength we have seen over the past couple of weeks in the corn market. You know, we went down. $7.50 is not a bad price on corn. As we look back over history, that's just awfully darn good. But the thing that we're going to really have to watch here, we're priced way out of the export market right now because Brazil is exporting corn cheap, and I guess by the rumors today, Argentina is too. And, of course, there's still some corn left in Russia. But pretty soon, they're going to be out of corn, and our poor feed guys are going to end up paying somewhere between $7.50 and $7.75 for cash corn, or maybe even $8 to feed these hogs and cattle they got on feed.
Pretty soon, the other countries will be out of corn for export. Are you hopeful that that'll happen anytime in the near term?
I think realistically, watching the basis levels both internationally and domestically is one of the things we're watching. Short term, I don't necessarily expect it to. Russia, Ukraine, Eastern Europe probably will be running out rather quickly if they haven't already. But I guess for the most part, we think that the world market is going to come to us before the end of this marketing year.
Livestock guys in trouble at this point?
Interesting to note, the hog guys are probably getting pushed pretty hard, but if I recall this week, egg sets were up about 1% above a year ago, and I think that was a bit of a surprise.
Did either of you pick that one up? Because it seems to me not only the egg sets were up, but livestock in general have been holding much stronger than most people had thought was
the cattle numbers are staying fairly good, Todd. We're looking, I mean, it's been a very aggressive cattle market out there. Most of our feeders that we deal with have protected themselves to some degree on their corn purchases. We know that there was some offers out there today. Some advisory firms were recommending buying corn and meal through the end of the year, and that these were levels that could do stuff. We're also looking at a great opportunity here that maybe the pork production in China has been down a little bit on some of their last statistical things, and it looks like we might have an open door to maybe send some more pork over to China this year, and that's a real good thing.
December this week and the wheat at 856 and three quarters was down three quarters, Kurt. The July at 841 and a quarter was up a penny. But really, there's only, what, 14 cents difference between those two from this year's crop to next year's crop. Anything that the guy who's putting wheat in the ground now should be thinking about? Oftentimes, we say that if you're putting the wheat in the ground, go ahead and make the sale. Doesn't really happen very often. Is this year different?
Well, we'd use some winter rallies to get some wheat protection. We feel wheat acres are going to be huge. Visiting the guys out west, it's extremely dry in some areas still there, so that's going to be the mark as we move into spring. But if we go ahead and get some moisture, it's going to be awful hard for new crop wheat to maintain these higher prices.
And we're about halfway through the price discovery period for the crop insurance value for wheat. So once you get over the hump, if the futures happen to poke above that, it might be an opportunity to price some stuff out.
Speaking of crop insurance values, it is the month of October, and we have to roll out a whole bunch of things that probably many of you have on board with a few of your producers. What are you telling them to do about the hedges they put in place protecting their crop insurance that were done in June and July?
Well, Todd, we have orders every day on the close to get out of a certain percentage of corn for different customers here, trying to keep with the average they're going to have with their crop insurance, number one. Others are sitting waiting. They were waiting for this report. They thought it was a little bit bullish corn. They exited a little bit after they saw that number yesterday, prematurely on Thursday. Like we say, for the corn, I think it's going to be okay. And as far as the wheat now, you know, we've got a tremendous price on the wheat insurance here. You can even take just the T yields and 70% and still insure over $400 to the acre as to what it was for that. So, you know, we're encouraging everybody to price a little bit, price 10 or 20%.
On these breaks in here, for those that's got some downside coverage, might not hurt to lighten up a little bit. We feel we found a fall low, can hold together. But our main concern is not during this time window. We're mainly concerned down the road, because what happens is you got all this price protection, then once we get through this month, price protection's off. Well, if the election's over and we run into some problems here this winter, there's some downside risk down the road. So we'd be inclined to start focusing past this into next spring.
And we've been lightening the load on those puts as far as the crop insurance is concerned. And Kurt's point's real valid. I mean, when you get another 3 or 4 weeks down the road, you start getting in holiday mode with Thanksgiving and Christmas, and it's real tough to generate upside potential in that kind of an environment.
All right. One final question for each of you. This is for corn and soybeans both. Once the guy's done, and there will be a lot of them that will be finished up very shortly, and they've sort of turned the key on the bin door, whether that be the bin door at home or the bin door in storage, one of the two, at the elevator, should they open it up anytime soon? Are there reasons to go ahead and make the sales? Kurt, you look like you want to answer.
Well, I've been doing this for 30 years. I've had no success whatsoever getting a guy to sell once he fills up the bin or he pays minimum storage. So it's tough to unlock things. I think you just got to push the pencil and monitor it as you go.
There's no carry really in the market here, Todd. If we can get up to the levels that we were talking about before, you know, close to $8 on the corn for a portion of it here, and that's talking more $7.80, $7.90 on the next batch, I think I would let some corn go. And on the beans, I think if we could possibly push back up to $16.50 or $16.40 in that level, I'm going to let half of my beans go.
Yeah, the futures market, neither the corn or the beans are giving you any reward to storage. I'd say look at your cash local basis and see if they're showing you carry there. If they are, then you could put it in the bin. Other than that, let loose and re-own it on paper.
There will be an awful lot of folks that say, well, I've got good corn. But I've got what?
Yeah.
They will, but I've got good corn.
There's typically that's not the right way to look at it. It may be good corn, but it's still you're expecting a structural shift in price, which may or may not come about.
One thing, keep in mind, talking to some of these guys that actually buy this, they've been under the gun for the last 2 years because they waited and bought it later and had to pay up for it. The strategy this year is to get booked ahead of time no matter what. And I think they're going to have coverage on before we reach that stage. I'm fearful we'll get down the road, you got good quality corn, but there might not be that demand there.
Wayne, I have a different question for you. An elevator manager now has a whole lot of corn. Well, he's got corn. A whole lot is relative, but he's got corn in storage. But he has to deal with the problem that the producer gave him, which is maybe not great condition corn, maybe some with aflatoxin. How much of a problem is that for an elevator operator?
Well, first off, if he does have aflatoxin-type corn, hopefully he dried it very fast, got it down, and he's got some way to screen it and take care of that a little bit. A lot of that problem will somewhat go away when he blends it off in the spring. The other problem is basically he needs to keep a very, very close eye on corn this year because there were a lot of other molds, other myotoxins out there besides the aflatoxin, and watch it. But basically, the elevator guy, as long as he does his job, which is keep all sorts of corn in condition, he needs to just watch the basis, and when it rewards him, he needs to reward the market.
Well, Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities from West Lafayette, Indiana, and Kurt Kimmel out of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. They'll all return with me in just a couple minutes when we'll talk with Joe Persaki. He's at USDA NASS, Washington, D.C.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. It was a very cool week across Illinois with temperatures 11 degrees below normal. There are widespread rains across the southern third of Illinois, basically south of Interstate 70 with amounts of 1 to 2 inches. Otherwise, there is only light and scattered rains across the rest of the state. The latest U.S. drought monitor came out this week. 7% of the state in south-central Illinois is drought-free. Far southern Illinois, as well as western and northern Illinois, are still in various stages of drought. Now that crops are being harvested and with cooler temperatures, I think we can expect soil moisture to continue to recover until the ground freezes. The forecast for this weekend is for warm temperatures and rain. On Saturday, highs will be in the upper 60s in northern Illinois, in the upper 70s and low 80s in central and southern Illinois. Saturday night, lows will be in the 60s across the state. High Sundays will be in the 60s in the northern half of the state and in the 70s in the southern half of the state. Rain is expected to hit northern Illinois Saturday afternoon and spread across the state by Saturday night and into Sunday morning. Rainfall totals are expected to be in the 1 to 2 inch range in western and northern Illinois, where it is needed most, and less than an inch elsewhere. The coming week should be pleasant with daytime highs in the 60s and 70s, and the nighttime lows in the 40s and 50s. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
This is the October 12 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason from University of Illinois Extension. In studio with us, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities and Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities. On the phone line is the director of the Statistics Division for USDA NASS in Washington, D.C., Joe Persaki. Joe, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Sure, Todd. Thanks a lot for inviting me.
Hey, can you go through up front? I asked these folks here about the 75-cent change in the cash price for soybeans, and I know part of that is calculated on a spreadsheet. Can you go through that for me and tell me how you come up with the figures?
And you're talking about on the...
It's a WASDE number, but you... Yeah, it's the farm gate price, though.
Well, really what that is that they, you know, basically what they're calculating is the expected price for the whole season, you know, coming up. So, you know, they're going back and looking at, you know, where things are going and such, you know, and plus, you know, basically they're just going through and seeing what they anticipate. And plus they being the guys at the World Board, they have, you know, time series models, you know, that look at some of our data that's coming in, you know, from NASS on a monthly basis, to see kind of where things are going. But you're right, it's basically a calculation, and we'll see at the end, you know, after NASS does it, data collection. You know, this is through the whole season.
Joe, you know, I know as we've looked this year, it's been a very difficult year for you guys and all of us out here trying to figure out how many acres are actually going to be harvested. You know, I know you've done as good a job as you can for this report. Do you think that we will either shrink or grow harvested acres for the next report?
Yeah, well, see, in November, there's generally no acreage change, generally. You know, not to say that we have some new information, because right now, based, you know, what we have, we don't have anything new. All we had was, you know, the FSA data plus some information from RMA, and you saw a little bit of harvested acreage change, you know, corresponding up, you know, where we went way up, and then there was some states like South Dakota we came down, but we didn't, you know, there was some more abandonment, I would argue. It didn't go for harvests. I would say that the best information that we're going to get going forth will be what we get out of the December survey with an updated harvest and planted ratio for the January annual.
Joe, did you happen to receive an email or a phone call from the White House to massage the numbers to help with the crop insurance payments, or receive an email or phone call from the White House to help help out with the election here?
Well, that's kind of a tough question. But, you know, the answer is no. As usual, you know, NASS, you know, as you guys know, NASS has no political employees that, you know, that work for us. Basically, we're all career civil servants, and you know, we calculated the numbers, and any time that anybody outside of NASS saw what the yield numbers were going to be and acreage changes was at, basically it was like 3 o'clock in the morning during lockup, and we transmitted it down to the World Board guys. And then at about 8:15 when we did the secretary's briefing.
Joe, my real question is, why is this planted acreage on corn and beans still kind of a moving target?
Well, you have to remember, this is one thing that we always tell people. You know, we get the FSA data, and then our friends at FSA started posting that information, I believe, last year, and it comes out, updated information comes out, 3 to 5 days after the WASDE and crop production report. Now, the thing that the people that we have done over years, we see that data grow. You know what I'm saying is that even though the date is July 15th for, in, you know, like say in the Illinois part of the world, there, it's amazing how much information does come in after the sign-up date, and that's where when we get around here to this October, you know, this October crop production report, that's when we're pretty satisfied or pretty sure that the acreage won't do any drastic increases. Now, I know FSA has done a lot better job in the last couple of years, so maybe, you know, our approach or our view of their data may change, but as of right now, you know, we're still kind of sticking to that October 1 date, you know, because if you remember back in 2008, we followed the FSA data and we made all kinds of changes, and we come to find out that the FSA data was wrong in the database. So we're a little cautious still right now.
Along those lines, you know, when you talk about the data, as the stocks-to-use ratios get tighter and tighter, and some of the global numbers get a little bit lower, is there any additional critical work that you do with the data to improve accuracy? And on top of that, do you guys have an estimate or a standard use for a pipeline supply for corn and beans?
Now, you got to remember, on the supply, on the demand side, that's our friends at the World Board, you know, take care of that side of things. And so I really can't comment on exactly what they do. I can just talk in general where they look at a lot of stuff. On our end, you know, on the supply side, basically the key thing is response from the farmers. I mean, the more information we get from the producers, the better the production estimates are going to be.
As we looked here, I think that you've stated a higher percentage of acres to be harvested in a drought year, back in 88 and 93, in that we lost or abandoned more acres than what you have so far. Do you think that there'll be some more abandonment of acres, later in the year here?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, we'll find out for sure when we do the December report. And the thing to remember, you know, I tell you, with $7 plus corn, I mean, there's a chance you may see more harvested this now than we did back, in 1988. I mean, it's just different now.
How have you adjusted for silage cutting?
Pardon? Repeat?
Adjusting for the additional silage cut this year?
Well, see, and that's another thing that we're very aware of that. We hear lots of reports about, the tremendous amount of silage. Now, the thing is that, that I've always commented, and until I see, data to support that, you have to remember, where are people cutting silage? And I always make the comment, where there generally is livestock. I mean, I had some relatives down in southern Illinois that their renter was cutting silage. And I said, what are they going to do with it? Well, they're going to put it in a bag. I said, well, what are they going to do with it? So you have to have someplace, to put it. And the other thing to remember, what is a lot of acres?
True.
I mean, take a state like Iowa, 13-plus million acres of corn. I mean, what's a lot? you think in Illinois, I know there's a lot of very, tough acres down, you get south of, say, I-70, but there's hardly any, there's no life, not much of a livestock industry much anymore, down there.
Hey, Joe, I have a question sort of about the technical thing that happens overnight in lockup. What time do you go in? And then you said you send numbers to the World Ag Outlook Board about 3 a.m. in the morning, and they have to massage the WASDE figures out of that by the 7:30 a.m. release time central?
Yeah, right. Because what we did, we came in, the first review was at about 11 o'clock. That would have been, Wednesday night going into Thursday, and it was citrus because this was our first citrus forecast. And then we went into corn, soybeans, and then cotton. And basically, we'll go through that process, and we'll establish what's called the regional target, regional total. And that would be, say, for corn, it's the 10 major states, beans, that's the big 11, and then cotton, it's six states. We'll establish that. Then our guys, the commodity stats for corn, soybeans, cotton, and citrus, they'll go through and they'll go back and check the data to make sure everything balances out for the states. And then at 3 o'clock in the morning, by 3 o'clock, and I think we might have gotten it down to them a little bit earlier today, this time, we have to have information down to the World Board so that they can finish up their supply and demand sheets. Now, I do know when going in, they have scenarios. Basically, this is, kind of a where they think it's going to be, and then lower than higher than, kind of where they're thinking. And then so when we come in, sometimes there's a surprise, sometimes there's not. I mean, they've already had the stocks information, from our stocks report last, on the end of the month, on September 28th. So they've had that part worked through. They were just waiting on the production side coming in for the 12-13 crop.
They ever send it back to you and say, do they say, you got to be kidding?
No, I'm just... Well, it's really interesting. Sometimes they go, wow, you really made us have to work very hard. or... Sometimes it comes back, it's about what we thought. So, it's just all over the board. I don't know if, overall at the U.S. level, we had a small change, in the corn production up a couple. I think, it was just, they just worked through it. So,
Joe, thanks so much.
Well, thanks, guys.
Hey, Joe Persaki is the director of the Statistics Division at USDA NASA. Final word from our panelists in studio. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
I think that harvest is moving along tremendously fast here. We want to look for opportunities to sell part of our grain that we didn't sell beforehand between now and Christmas.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
I think Bill had a real good point. I think in your marketing, you need to stay flexible.
And Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities.
Yeah, along with the flexibility, plan ahead because the market's moving really, really fast. So you got to basically have your orders working in order to get capitalized on the best opportunities.
And that wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You can always find us online at WILLAG.org. Have a great week.